lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've gone into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you were speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello, I am Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the Two Soft Compounds, and we're going to be looking back at the Singapore Grand Prix on this podcast, and of course looking forward to the Russian Grand Prix, which is happening this weekend as well. Two more back-to-back races there. They're cramming them all in at this part of the season. But the Singapore Grand Prix, one of my favourites as always, because it is the night race. I love the bit where you get to see all their eyes behind the visors. Mm. But for me, it was okay, but it was an average Singapore Grand Prix, I think. I've seen better.
Yeah, it didn't have the massive amounts of drama we were hoping for, but it had its own sort of internal story and dialogue and drama, which was mostly due to strategy and pit stops, which we'll discuss at more length in just a bit. The one thing I love about the Singapore race is, you're right, you get to see the driver's eyes. I also love the helicopter shots over Singapore. It's just, it looks like something out of a sci-fi movie. The atmosphere there must be fantastic. I had a few friends that were there over that weekend and they posted pictures, and it looked as though they had more access than you would get in a normal F1 event as well. I just think it's a great venue to go racing. I know that a lot of people have been suggesting that it's not a good track, but I think it really is. 23 turns, one of the longest, loads of gear changing in the heat. Brilliant.
Yeah, I enjoy it. My friend Scott, who we had on the podcast last week, sent me some videos of the airport as well. And the airport is like incredible. It's you know, when you go into like a zoo and they've got an aviary and there's all flowers and butterflies and all that. So it was like that in the airport, and these like waterfalls and stuff. It's like, this is Singapore airport, beats Manchester any day of the week. But it's incredible. But yeah, it's a proper spectacle, the Singapore Grand Prix. And we finally have a Vettel win.
Yeah, you know what? I've remained really positive about Vettel. I hope I've demonstrated this on the podcast over the last 6 months. I've always thought he was a brilliant driver, obviously a 4-time world champion. I felt really sorry for him when he made the errors. I felt sorry for him the Canadian Grand Prix when Hamilton won and he kind of really should have done. And I was like, oh, bless him, when he was on the podium at the end of the Singapore race. Clearly emotional, you know, tears in his eyes. Because you imagine the pressure he must have been under with Leclerc coming in as the young gun and him really making errors and not performing. But this was a brilliant turnaround.
Yeah, and like you say, I'm a big fan of him. I like his personality. He's got a very British sense of humour, hasn't he? Mm. And yeah, I like the guy. I always have liked the guy. I think he's a great driver. We said before, you know, you don't win 4 world titles by accident. He has had a rough year or two at Ferrari, and it's nice to see him have a little win. Interesting circumstances, of course, with the undercut and stuff. And Leclerc, yeah, a lot of people saying, I've seen lots of stuff online. I think people enjoy conspiracy theories sometimes, because I've seen a few things where people are like, oh, did they do that on purpose? And are they, you know, trying to keep Leclerc in his cage? But why would Ferrari do that? Why would they stop one of their drivers being as good as he can be just so the other one wins? I don't think you'd do that. But yeah, good to see him win. And I thought Leclerc had a good race. Leclerc, once again, very mature with, you know, he tweeted straight after the race. And again, they would be full of adrenaline and stuff. And he tweeted something along the lines of, congratulations to Seb, you know, not the race I wanted, but, yeah, you know, very mature response. And even, you know, we've mentioned before Lando and people like that. These guys are so young, but they've all really got their head screwed on, and they know what they're talking about. And they're very fair and very, you know, genuine. And there's the clip of Hamilton giving Vettel a hug as well. And I just feel like all the drivers this year are all relatively getting on pretty well. I mean, everyone hates Grosjean as he crashes into everyone. But all joking aside, I think they seem to be getting on well. They seem like it's a good group of drivers, and I think they've got a lot of respect for each other. And Albon and Lando and all the new guys coming in are brilliant. And it's a nice field of drivers, I think.
What impressed me about Vettel on the Singapore race was, okay, so he found himself in the lead of the race through the strategy and the pit stops. But then he knew that Mercedes were playing the long game and that could cause them problems. And what Mercedes were trying to do was play the long game with Hamilton and Bottas, get them to work as teammates together, which we'll discuss shortly. But they were hoping that the two Ferraris, once they'd pitted early, would come up against these backmarkers and struggle to get through the traffic. But what I was impressed about Vettel was that he came out of the pits and went at those backmarkers hell for leather. Some real brazen moves, bit of wheel rubbing going on between him and some of the slower cars as he made his way through to the genuine lead of the race, which I thought was really impressive, because he could have been quite lackluster and not confident, but he really did. And Leclerc was struggling to follow him at times. And I thought that was just a bit of a masterclass from a full-time world champion. Mercedes played the long game, tried to stay out as long as they could. And then we get this radio message to Bottas about keeping his lap times slow so that Hamilton can make sure he comes out in front of him. That was a bit bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah, that radio call I loved as well, because when James made the radio call, it's like he's ordering a cake or something. He's like, Valtteri, hi, it's James. Can you do 148.8 for me, please? Yeah, that's great. Thanks very much. It's like, it's so calm, isn't it, when you think these guys are doing 150, 180 miles an hour. I was surprised at that. I thought it was a very un-Mercedes thing to do, and it's almost like he signed the contract for next year, so he knows his seat's safe, and then they're kind of like, well, you now owe us because we've given you another year, so we're going to tell you, you know. And that must be frustrating as a racing driver to be told, because I think he was doing like 145s or something at the time, to be told to be 3 seconds slower or something crazy like that. As a racing driver, that must be crazy, mustn't it, to think, well, this is blatantly going one way, they're asking me to be that slower per lap. It's a very strange decision. And is it because Mercedes have suddenly realised that Ferrari have got their stuff together, and, you know, Ferrari are all of a sudden very quick, and they're panicking now, thinking, well, hang on, you know, the second part of the season, we need Hamilton to stretch his legs as much as he can here. I mean, the only good thing for Mercedes there is we keep getting different winners. So you've got, you know, Vettel, Leclerc, Bottas, and even Max is in there as well, where they're all kind of around similar points now. I was noticing at the weekend, and no one's really taken any chunks out of Hamilton. He's still stretching his legs, even with thirds and fourths. But are Mercedes, are they worried about that? But if that is the case, surely they want Bottas up there as well so they can get the constructors.
Yeah, that was a bit strange. I mean, what we've seen this weekend is the emergence of Ferrari, as we've seen in years past when they finally got it together. So last week on the podcast, we were talking about it being a battle between Mercedes and Red Bull. Ferrari, we kind of discounted a little bit because of their slow speed aero problems. So when they're on a track with slow speed corners, which Singapore is full of, their aero package just isn't up to beating Mercedes, but we know they've got a good engine in a straight line. So when we came to Singapore, we knew that, well, we thought the Ferrari would be struggling, but they've sorted that out with the upgrade they brought. And that is so exciting for the rest of the season, that they're going to be able to compete at any track, really. They're going to be great at the ones with long straights like Mexico and Japan, but they're also going to not suffer as much as they have done in the slower speed corners, which makes the rest of the season really exciting. I read somewhere that Hamilton can finish third in every race and still win the championship.
Right, yeah.
So it is going to be, you know, it's going to be a tall order for anyone to challenge him before the end of the year. I thought it was great. There was a so-called F1 expert on Twitter going into the Singapore Grand Prix who said, and I quote, "Anyone who believes Ferrari can do well at this race is either new to the sport or a complete imbecile." I really enjoyed tweeting him back after qualifying. I really did. Because obviously Leclerc puts it on pole, Vettel is in second, and we were set up for a Ferrari dominating weekend.
I think this is the beauty of F1, though, isn't it? We had a couple of absolutely shockingly boring races to start the season, and everyone was like, oh, God, this is going to be a soul-destroying season. And then all of a sudden, we had those three amazing races in a row, and you just never know what's coming. You know, they're constantly changing these cars, constantly doing updates. I was telling you just now as well, laps led in 2019 so far. This was fascinating. I saw this online. Giovinazzi, of course, was leading in this race. He's had 4 laps led. Verstappen is next with 99 laps led. Vettel, 104. Bottas, 111. And then there's a huge leap to the top two. Leclerc has led 226 laps. And Hamilton has led 360 laps as well so far this season. So huge kind of gaps between them. But I think it's showing that you've got three definite teams. You know, the Red Bull is still up there at certain tracks. The Ferrari's got their stuff together. Mercedes are still a powerhouse package, but struggling a little bit now as the other guys are catching them up. So we've got three realistic teams to fight now, which is great. It's exactly what you want for every Grand Prix, isn't it?
Can we sound the Grosjean trip alarm, please?
Grosjean trip alarm. Grosjean trip alarm.
Yes, so Grosjean gets a new contract extension with the Haas team, which will see him in that seat for 2020, and celebrates by spinning off in FP2 and crashing into George Russell during the race in Singapore. Now, I like Grosjean as a person. He comes across as a polite young man who wants to do the best for the team and all of that stuff. But you can't take away from the fact that he just hasn't been very good for the last 2 years. So when he spun in FP2, he got straight on the radio and he said, "That's what happens when you talk to me in the corners." So basically blamed his engineer. And then in the race, the excuse was that George mustn't have seen me. But if you actually watch it back, a lot of people were saying it was Russell's fault. I just don't think it was. He hit the apex at a strange angle, but then just carried on. And Grosjean had the opportunity to back out of it because there was a gap that was closing all the time. And he just didn't. He did a Grosjean and span. Ridiculous.
I am surprised he's re-signed for another year, because I thought even Magnussen and Grosjean are just not getting on great. And even the concept of those two being in a team together for another year, I thought that's unlikely to happen. But yeah, like you say, they've signed him up as well. So there's only a few seats left remaining now, isn't there? So Hülkenberg, I think, is in real trouble. I saw a story where he was offered the McLaren IndyCar drive by Zak Brown. And he's turned it down because he doesn't want to do oval racing. You know, I know Schumacher said that in the past, got no interest in oval racing. I guess Hülkenberg's got to go to either one of the remaining seats left. And there's really not that many. You've got Williams, maybe a Toro Rosso, but unlikely. And other than that, it's Formula E or sports car racing or something like that, isn't it? But it's going to be an interesting season for Hülkenberg now, see where he ends up.
Leaving screeching skid marks all over the place. Two soft compounds.
Before we get the stats from Nicky this week, let's talk about the best of the rest. Lando Norris was really consistent throughout the race, stayed in seventh place from start to finish, really. Stayed out of trouble, made some good overtaking moves at restarts and things. I thought it was a great race for him. Danny Ric, really unfortunate. After being disqualified in qualifying, which I thought was really bizarre, he was a millisecond. MG UK was producing a millisecond a lap advantage because it was set up wrong and they disqualified him. As Renault said, it was set in qualifying one on his slowest lap. So Why don't you just go, yeah, okay, so you've slap on the wrist, you've made a slight setup error there, but no, they disqualified. So he qualified eighth, but they disqualified him. So I thought he did really well at the start of the race to make his way through the pack, and then he had the puncture, and it all went a bit wrong for him, but I thought he was really impressive. We saw the Danny Ric that we love, hard on the brakes down the inside, making those really exciting moves. He was probably the most exciting overtaker of the whole weekend.
Yeah, I've got a lot of the thing I love about the new bunch of drivers, Daniel Ricciardo, Lando, all these, they've all got really good personalities on and off the track as well. So they're very brave drivers, like you say, hard on the brakes, late on the brakes. Max does it, Lando does it, Ricciardo does it. But also out of the car, they've all got strong personalities. They're very funny guys. So there's a lot of great drivers. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Ricciardo's finally getting himself, you know, where he needs to be in that Renault, and it's all kind of clicking for him now.
Let's talk about Red Bull. Max Verstappen expected to be challenging for the win of this race before the weekend until we saw the pace that the Ferraris had. Max did a good job, very consistent, stayed out of trouble, I thought. And Alex Albon, I was really impressed on qualifying day. I thought, and I said on last week's podcast, if he can get a qualifying slot next to Verstappen, then he'll have proved himself to be on a par with the young Dutchman, which is something Gasly could never do. And he did. I was watching qualifying live, and Max crossed the line with a certain time, and a few milliseconds behind him was Albon. It was just split at the last minute by Bottas. But he did a great job. Again, Albon, very mature for his age, and I think he drives the wheels off the car, and he's still getting used to that Red Bull. He did really well.
Check out twosoftcompounds.com for the latest news, competitions and updates.
Right, let's get some post-race stats from the Singapore Grand Prix with our stats man. You can find him on Twitter, of course, at Lights Out. He's got some amazing blogs and stuff that happen all across the race weekends as well. And here he is with the Singapore post-race stats.
Vettel finally ends his win drought. Magnussen becomes a Singapore record holder. And Giovinazzi leads a race for the first time. Here are five of the best statistics from the 2019 Singapore Grand Prix weekend. On Sunday, Sebastian Vettel claimed his first win since the 2018 Belgian Grand Prix, 392 days ago. But that's not the longest gap between two wins in a driver's career. In fact, there are 90 longer intervals between two wins in Formula One history. Vettel himself has had two longer gaps between wins in his career. He had to wait 490 days for a victory between his last Red Bull win and his first Ferrari win. And then he also had to wait 553 days between his two wins at the 2015 Singapore Grand Prix and the 2017 Australian Grand Prix. On the subject of Ferrari, somewhat unbelievably, this is the first time the team have recorded three consecutive wins since 2008. The last three consecutive wins came during a streak of four victories between the 2008 Malaysia and Turkey races. Should Ferrari win in Russia, it would be only the 12th time that the team have taken four consecutive wins in their history. Red Bull were deemed by some to be the favourites heading into the Singapore Grand Prix, but that proved not to be the case. 2019 marks the first time that no Red Bull driver has appeared in the top three on the grid at this circuit since 2008, and the first time that neither of the team's drivers have finished in the top two since 2009. But Max Verstappen's third place in the race means that Red Bull have appeared on the podium in every single Singapore Grand Prix this decade. For the first time in 2019, the point for fastest lap was not awarded, as the driver who set it finished outside the top 10. This is the second year in a row that Kevin Magnussen has set the fastest lap of the Singapore Grand Prix. Last year's Marina Bay race also happens to be the last time that the driver who set the fastest lap finished outside the points. Magnussen's second fastest lap means that he shares the record for most fastest laps at the circuit with Fernando Alonso, Daniel Ricciardo and Lewis Hamilton. And finally, Antonio Giovinazzi led four laps of the 2019 Singapore Grand Prix, making him the 172nd driver to have led a Formula One race. It's the first time since Williams led the opening laps of the 2015 British Grand Prix that a team other than Mercedes, Ferrari or Red Bull has led a lap. For the team, it's the first time that the former Sauber cars have led a race since Esteban Gutierrez led two laps of the 2013 Spanish Grand Prix, and the first time that the Alfa Romeo name has led a race since Andrea De Cesaris led the 1983 Belgian Grand Prix.
Two soft compounds.
Thank you, Nicky. You can follow him on Twitter, of course, at Lights Out. He's got a great blog that he does across the race weekends as well that you can check out. Right, so this weekend we move on straight to the next Grand Prix. No break this weekend. We're going straight into Sochi for the Russian Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's around the Winter Olympic Park there. I base my knowledge of Formula One tracks by playing them on the PlayStation. And apart from the traditional old ones that I have visited when I worked in the sport, but the new ones, I play on the PlayStation. And Russia's a weird one. It's kind of like a street circuit, but it's not. So there are sections where they have concrete walls lining the track, and there are some sections with a bit of tarmac runoff. There are lots of right-angled corners, so 90-degree turns to the left and right. Traditionally, had we been in the position we were 5 or 6 weeks ago, Ferrari would have not done well at this track. They have the power on the long straights, great, but on the slow-speed corners, we've already covered the fact that they've now solved that issue. So Ferrari come back into the equation alongside Red Bull, who have traditionally done well here, and Mercedes, who have won here multiple times. So it's going to be really exciting.
Mm. And it's like you say, I think the top three teams are very evenly matched now. I think Mercedes have always had the best ultimate package for all the tracks since the start of the season. But Ferrari have definitely got their stuff together and they've joined them. And the Red Bulls, they're kind of... they'll have a great weekend, then they'll disappear, then they'll have a great weekend, then disappear, and they're kind of on and off depending on the track, aren't they? But that's the beauty of these kind of races that we've got left for the rest of the season, is you just don't know who's going to be in the top three. So it's going to be an exciting race. I still think Leclerc, as I mentioned before, the fact he put it on pole again, yeah. That was his fifth pole already and three in a row, wasn't it? And I think even Hamilton, he said to him in the press conference, is that three in a row now? And even Hamilton was kind of like, wow, you're doing all right here. And it's funny when... rattled is the wrong word, but when you see the respect from these drivers with four or five world titles, looking at these young kids going, oh, well, okay, you're doing quite well, and checking out other people's stats and facts, it's quite funny, I think. But Leclerc is just on fire for me at the moment, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gets another pole position. I think Vettel's going to be back with a lot of confidence after that win. Hamilton, like you say, Hamilton has been, for me, he's been a very different driver this year. He's, I won't say he's happy, he did a radio call where he said, I don't know what happened, guys, we went from second to fourth, how's that possible? This shouldn't happen, guys. And he did his usual kind of angry toys out the pram moment. But overall this year, I think he's been very laid back, just very calm.
Yeah.
and he's been respectful to the other drivers. He's been happy for other drivers to win Grand Prix, which is not the Lewis that I remember from a few years back. Whether it's he's just so far ahead, he knows he's kind of got it in the bag already. He's got, like you said, he can get third in every race and still win the title. You've got to assume he's going to have another couple of wins before the end of the season. So in that sense, a lot's got to happen. He's got to have a couple of did not finishes to really affect this title run, I think. So whether that's to do with it or not, I don't know. But it's interesting to see, I think.
You know what? I think with the Ferrari upgrade that's clearly worked brilliantly for them, it would not surprise me, because they've got two of the best drivers on the grid, to see Ferrari get a 1-2 at every race for the rest of the season. I mean, it still would be Hamilton's championship to lose, and there will be tracks coming up that are more suited to the Mercedes overall power and downforce ratio than Ferrari. But, you know, Ferrari, it was that aero problem they had to sort out for their slow cornering speeds, and they've done it. So, brilliant. Bring it on. Let's see what happens. A reinvigorated Vettel and the young gun in the Leclerc. Brilliant. Hamilton, almost, it sounds bizarre saying it, the elder statesman now who has got the crowns and wants another. This is a great run-in to the end of the season.
Yeah, and for me, I think I'm going to go with Leclerc for pole. And I think in the race, I'm going to flip it. I'm going to think Vettel's going to get another win. Hamilton second, Leclerc third in the race, but I think Leclerc's going to get pole.
I'm going to go for Vettel pole, and in the race, Vettel, Hamilton, Leclerc.
Interesting stuff. So Sochi is this weekend. We'll be back next week, of course, to review the Russian Grand Prix, and hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have another exciting race.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.